Good evening. Welcome back to Coast AM. Our guest Robert Kramer is with us this evening talking about his book, The Demon of Brownsville Road. Bob Kramer, our guest. We're going to open up phone lines now and start taking your questions for our guest for the foreseeable future. Before we do that, Bob, a quick question for you. Now that you've defeated this, your family is off and growing and doing their own things. Has the darkness tried to attach to any one of the family members now that it's out of your house? Or are you all living relatively safe now?
Well, that's a very, very good and interesting question. And if you would have asked me that a couple weeks ago, I would have said everything's fine. In fact, two of my children, my daughter and another son, interestingly enough, the two that were least affected when it was taking place have both told me about things happening in their homes. I guess this isn't completely surprising, but my daughter has experienced sleep paralysis over the past week. And if, for those not familiar with that, it's when you wake up, you don't know if you're really awake, asleep, you're in some kind of hazy limbo, and you can't move in bed. Sometimes you can't even cry out, and you're frozen. I've taken steps, and I understand what to do, and went in and blessed their houses, and went through a whole process, it seemed, last week to take care of it. But she called me again this morning about the same complaint, so I'll just go and do it again. I think... that evil is not happy and will continue not to be happy. I really don't think they can get back in the house. I truly, my faith tells me that if evil is unhappy with me, you know, we've really gone out on a limb here. I've told this story, and I truly believe that we also have angelic support around us to protect us at the same time.
Do you think by picking the scab right now and kind of talking about it again, Bob, do you think maybe that might be what's drawing the energy back to your two children?
Thought of this book and everything that, yes, sure. Now that it's come out and I could write a second book, I'll tell you, about how difficult it was to even write this story. And as I moved in to try to discover how to get it published and everything, all of the obstacles that I encountered, every possible thing that could prevent me from telling this story, I believe happened. It was quite a struggle, and I not that I'm looking to write another book. This was difficult enough, and I just felt driven that this story had to be told. And I experienced this for a reason. We didn't experience this to get done with it and then forget about it. This is so true and so convincing and so credible. The story has to be told.
What about for the cynics who think it's being told so that you can cash in on the market like The Conjuring and the Amityville Horror? How do you talk to your cynics on that?
Well, I have had some discussions with people that started out as being cynics. Certainly, I'm not looking for fame and fortune. I'm not impressed by being on the radio or television. I've met presidents, I've met prime ministers. I've done all those things, and I'm relatively well off now as well with my business. I'm not looking for, I have no idea if this book would make any money, and quite frankly, that's not what motivated me. This story is true, and it has to be told. And if someone wants to debate me or argue with me over my credibility, have at it. I'd be happy to do that. And as I told one skeptical academic once, and he said, well, it's only your word. And I said, well, it's interesting that first-person testimony send individuals to jail for life all the time. So credibility does make a difference. And when someone says something and they attest to it and swear to it, it does have weight.
Let's take a break. When we come back with Bob Cranmer, we're taking your calls. If you have specific questions for our guest about his dealing with the demonic, we'd like to hear from you. Stay tuned. More Coast to Coast continues right after this. We're back with Coast to Coast AM. Our guest, Bob Cranmer, staying in with us to take some of your calls this evening. Let's go to East of the Rockies, Tony, who's out trucking through Kansas. Welcome to the show, and what's your question this evening, Tony?
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, Mr. Cranmer, I was listening to you, and I believe what you're saying and everything. And my question is about the rosary. You mentioned that the rosary was used, and I was wondering just how much the priest or utilized the rosary, because I had some friends tell me about the rosary and how powerful a prayer it was and stuff like that. And I just wonder how much you guys utilized the rosary in this process. And I'll take my question or take my answer off here. Thanks.
Good.
Great. Thank you very much, Tony.
The priests would come sometimes instead of saying Mass, or in a number of cases, in addition to saying Mass, we would all gather in a room and we would say the rosary. One, and this is detailed in the book, one interesting time, I remember it was in the middle of summer, and as we were saying the rosary, the room was filled with what seemed to be the pleasant aroma of flowers. And not only did I notice it, other folks in the room noticed it as well. And afterwards, the priest said, well, the Blessed Mother is generally always recognized by the smell of roses. And we felt very, very good and uplifted with that until I walked out of the room and went across the hallway into the other room that was empty. And we had been saying the rosary in Bobby's old room. And when I went over into the other room, the stench was there and present. So it didn't actually try to come into the room when we were saying the rosary, but it wanted to let us know we were there. Now, myself personally, I said the rosary several times every day. I would say it out loud at night before I got ready for bed. When I say out, I would pray it out loud, and then I would always take the rosary to bed with me, and many times would fall asleep with it in my hands. And that's when this thing would try to would put the beads together. And one time it even defaced the crucifix on the end of one set of rosaries. So
do you think just out of curiosity, when we started the interview, you talked about the religious aspect and you just kind of thought it was hocus pocus and that they were going to come in and sprinkle some water. And do you think that the reason it took so long for you to finally get strength behind that, and the reason that they were able to mock the religious icons and pieces that you used, was because you weren't really believing in the power of these religious pieces? So without your belief, they really meant nothing to the demons?
Well, that's a very good question. I never thought of it like that. And initially, I would have to say yes. I just didn't understand, the power behind them. Now, once I began to utilize them, and it would try to prevent me from saying the rosary, or it would retreat from holy water, I gained strength and gained confidence that these were real spiritual weapons. And we live in this, I was in this space between having one foot in reality, in the physical world, and one foot in the supernatural world. I've said many times it was like the movie The Matrix, where you pass back and forth between this the physical world and then this unseen world around us that exists and is there. It was a process.
All right, let's go. We've got on the wild card line Harold, who's also trucking his way across California. Harold, welcome to the show. What's your question?
My question is this gentleman promoting the Catholic religion? I'll back out right now.
You know, what I will say is that ultimately the story, the victory, and I'm promoting Jesus Christ, and I'm promoting his sacrificial death on the cross, represented in the movie we referenced before. So whether you're Protestant or you're Catholic, it all surrounds Jesus. That's who I'm promoting. That's who my book promotes. Now, as far as the Catholic Church goes, the Catholic Church has been around for over 2,000 years. The Bible, the New Testament, speaks over and over and over again about Jesus dealing with evil spirits, and subsequently the book of Acts talks about the apostles dealing with evil spirits. There's quite a bit of learning that has gone into, and the church has discerned over the centuries and, you know, several thousand years on how to deal with this stuff. So if I'm promoting the church, I'm promoting the Catholic Church's background, experience, and wisdom in how to deal with this evil. Am I saying, you know, all the, you know, Protestants are no good? No, we're all Christians. And if there's
and you're just speaking from the angle that you understand, Bob. I mean, right? Isn't that the correct perspective? I mean, if you were Protestant or Methodist or Lutheran, and their pastors came in and helped you, you'd be talking about that aspect of the story.
If that would be the case, certainly.
Right. I always find it intriguing when we talk about cases like this, how put off people get when you bring up the name of Christ or God as helping, yet, you know, that's what the story entails. That's what happened in this specific case. And, it, you know, it does seem to work. And in some cases, ladies and gentlemen, there are cases where religious evocation has not worked. So it's not the end-all be-all. There are some creations, some creatures and beings out there, like the jinn, that are claimed to predate Christianity and religion and theology, that just cannot be defeated by quoting the Bible or prayers or facing Jesus Christ. So that is just part of Bob's story, because that's how his life played out. Let's go ahead and take another call. We've got Wildcard Line Bob in Utah. Welcome to the show, Bob. What's your input?
I have a question, but I was driving down the road, and I've been thinking about this for a long time, and I almost fell out of my chair when I heard it, because this same thing has happened to my family, and it happened over a span of 6 years. We moved into this house, and my oldest daughter said, do not buy this house, and she begged us not to buy it. We ended up buying it, and very similar things to what you're talking about has happened. There were psychiatric problems. It focused on her, and she was one that actually got kind of taken over by it a couple of times. And as a result, it went through her to my son, and my wife has completely changed around. I had some major depressive issues as a result of that, and I'm here to tell you that what you're saying is real. And that question about the Catholic Church and Christ, this is real stuff, and I've basically been separated from my wife as a result of this. When you came on, I was like, no way. I've been thinking this for the last 4 years, and this is what happened to my family, and I focused on my daughter. And since my daughter has moved out of that house, she's had to continue to have some psychiatric problems, but I guess I have a question for you, but I just want to tell one other thing first is we're separated as a family, and I know that this spirit has done it. But I had one experience where I was in the bed with my wife, and she jumped up. She goes, did you lay on top of my feet? And I said, no. And so about 20 minutes later, somebody else laid on top of my feet. I jumped up. And then the next morning, we discussed it. And I said the word Genesis. She goes, you got to be kidding me. She goes, that word has been in my mind all night. I'm wondering first, does that word have any relevance to what we're talking about? And two, what can I do to get my family back together?
That's a fascinating question. You said that you knew that this story needed to be told, Bob. Is it for cases like this so that people don't feel alone and realize that this is what's going on out there and that it does affect people in a real world sense?
Well, it kind of his story kind of gives me chills because, my family got to the point where we were broken up. Prior to when I said in late 2003 when it all hit, my two sons and I had a really, really serious confrontation one night. There was a big battle that took place throughout the house. The police showed up, and it was just a terrible situation. I was arrested, and because of my notoriety, it was all, it even made the Philadelphia newspapers. I was out of the house for several months, and at that point in time, I was very close to just saying, I'm not even going to go home. I'm done. Not understanding what had been taking place in setting that whole thing up. I believe what really caused this thing to unmask itself is when I decided to come back to the house to attempt to put my family back together again. That's when it unmasked itself, and we were faced with the entity in and of itself unmasked it. And prior to it, it had been doing this surreptitious under the radar screen separation and attacks on us mentally and breaking us up. So as far as how to deal with it and why I've done this, I believe that the story will have an impact at least on the Catholic Church. I do know that every diocese in the United States now has been instructed that they should have a trained exorcist on staff ready to deal with issues like this. And I think that once the story gets out, more and more people will identify with it, relate to it, as this gentleman just did, recognize certain aspects of it that he's dealing with, and at least the Catholic Church and hopefully other denominations as well will recognize that this is a serious issue. I think it's getting worse, and we need to pull together and deal with this evil. And I think this is going to be a watershed event, and good will ultimately come from it.
We'll continue taking your calls into the next half an hour. We're going to take a break here. We'll keep talking about the demon of Brownsville Road, a Pittsburgh family's battle with evil in their home. Bob Cranmer is our guest, C-R-A-N-M-E-R. Go check out coasttocoastam.com to find out more about our guest, more about his book, and the links. You can find them also on Facebook. Go to Facebook, type in The Demon of Brownsville Road, and you can follow them and keep up with what's going on with their story and when the book will be officially released. Demonofbrownsville.com is the website to check out for more information. And again, to buy the book, pre-order it, watch the video and information that they have there. Again, that's demonofbrownsville.com. Remember, if you love the supernatural and the paranormal and you'd like to continue your journey Monday through Friday before Coast to Coast, join me, Dave Schrader. I'm the host of Darkness Radio, heard around the world at darknessradio.com. You can tune in as we talk about ghosts, aliens, monsters, myths, and legends, and True Crime Tuesdays. You can find all of those and our podcasts at darknessradio.com. Stay tuned. We'll continue taking your calls for the next hour and a half here on Coast to Coast AM. Having a fascinating time here tonight on Coast to Coast AM, The Demon of Brownsville Road. Bob Cranmer is our guest. He's the author, experiencer, and survivor of a demonic infestation in his home. We're taking your calls for Bob during this hour. We'll have open phone lines in the last hour of the show. West of the Rockies, Michael in Los Angeles, welcome to Coast AM.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. Bob?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you're a Catholic now, correct?
Yes.
And you were confirmed? that sacrament of confirmation?
I was confirmed, yes.
Good. That's why you can do exorcisms. I'm a Roman Catholic, and I'm an exorcist. From 84 to 90, a colleague of mine and a priest who was a personal friend of John Paul II did research. We found out that Catholic laymen who have the sacrament of confirmation can do exorcisms on any person, place, thing, or situation from anywhere at any time of their choosing. And I've had 8 bishops face-to-face tell me I'm absolutely correct. And they don't want, but they will not teach it to laymen. When asked why, they said, we don't want the laymen to know they have this tremendous authority and power. And it is your God-given right to know that. And you can do exorcisms on your children and on the situation, and it's going to lighten up for you. And I will help you. I just finished, not too long ago, a 7-year exorcism. And it was very difficult. It was on a man who was the son of a Cosa Nostra godfather. It's a little bit difficult. But anyway, got him turned around, and when he passed away as a Roman Catholic. So,
Michael, let me ask real quickly, if I may. You're an exorcist. Are you a lay exorcist, or are you a priest? Okay, so a lay exorcist.
Correct. They don't want you to know. In other words, the Pope knows, the cardinals know, the bishops know, priests don't know, but they want to keep the layman ignorant of the fact that the sacrament of confirmation is where you get the authority and power, and that the fact is that you can do exorcisms. But incidentally, they hid this knowledge 1,794 years ago this year. But we found out in 1990, and we've been applying it ever since. And I've used it against some very serious politicians, et cetera, and told them they were going to lose their next election if they didn't do what God wanted. They chose not to, and they lost their next election. So you can use it. It's to be ubiquitous. In other words, as much of it as there is prayer, there should be exorcism. On just
Michael, wouldn't that actually help people convert to Catholicism? Why would they hide something like that if indeed it empowered you to have the ability to protect yourself from the others, especially when the church for many years, as you've kind of mentioned, has not been prepared to deal with exorcisms, and there wasn't nearly enough exorcists to deal with the onslaught of claims and doing this. You would think instead of hiding it, they would promote the fact that this is why you should be a Catholic. This is how you can protect yourself, and you can help in these cases.
Well,
but why the conspiracy of hiding it, in your opinion?
Well, I know what it is. You see, Satan and his demons had to do a lot of work to get that concealed. And as soon as they concealed it, they went after the married priesthood. You see, the married priesthood was extensive. In the 400s, we had 2 popes that were married. In the 500s, it was the last one, but he was married. And after they hid that knowledge, they wanted to go after the married priesthood, because if it was just a celibate priesthood, they knew what could happen. They knew the evils that would creep into the church. And in the 1000s, St. Peter Damian talked about all the sodomy that was going on in the church and in the monasteries and in the convents and all that. So the reason that they didn't want us to know is because when we spotted the evil, we could drive it out ourselves. I put a couple of priests out myself. I'd go to Mass and do exorcisms out their Mass, and then they would just leave after about 6 months. And so we laymen, with the power and the knowledge of exorcism, can take care of any of the evils within the church. And right now I'm trying to get in touch with the Ukrainian bishop to call on him to teach exorcism to the Ukrainian people so they can drive the Russians right out of their country by simply doing exorcisms. Because you're supposed to be able, and I have used it, I say, on any person, place, thing, or situation from anywhere at any time of my choosing, just remembering that it's more powerful the closer you are to the object of the exorcism. Hmm. But you can do it from the other side of the world. And when you get a lot of people.
But how do you do it from the other side of the world when you had to deal with an up-close exorcism that took you 7 years? If you're doing it from the other side of the world, how do you even factor in the fact of how long that's going to take?
When I did the exorcism for 7 years, He was in San Francisco or in New York or wherever he was, and I was in L.A.
Okay, so it was because of the distance that you feel it was really keeping you from being successful.
Well, I mean, that was part of the problem, but, okay. I mean, it was a tough exercise. I mean, this guy was the son of a godfather. Do you understand what that means, what he had done in his life?
Sure.
Wow. So what I'm saying is that God has made it available to us now to return this knowledge to us, and that bishops have to admit it when you ask that question, because if they didn't admit it, they'd be denying the Holy Spirit. And they're not going to do that. See, there's a difference between concealing something and denying it, okay?
All right.
So I was face-to-face with these fellows, and they all had to say yes. They
all right.
And
well,
so
Michael, thank you. We have to go to a break. Thank you very much for weighing in and showing us a different aspect and a different insight. I appreciate that. Bob, you've worked in the world of politics for many years and have dealt with that. How many politicians do you know that could probably use a good exorcism?
I guess we could talk about that at length.
Is there enough holy water to scrub the evil out?
Washington D.C. right now. I think there's plenty of candidates there. I'd say tongue in cheek. Real quick, you know, I did learn a lot through this. I'm certainly not looking to have any career.
Sure.
Is it exorcism or a Ghostbuster? If it's my choice, I don't have to deal with this again. I probably will. But as I have in the past, but it'd be my choice that this just all would become, you know, a chapter of my life. I'm certainly not looking for a career as an exorcist.
Let's take a break. Demonofbrownsville.com is the website to check out. We'll come back with Bob Cranmer. More of your calls here on Coast to Coast, the best in overnight talk radio. We're back on Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host for the evening, Dave Schrader. Our guest, Bob Cranmer. We've been talking about his experience dealing with a demonic infestation in his home. We're taking your calls. First-time caller line, Roger in New Hampshire. Welcome to the show.
Hello, can you hear me?
We can. Thank you for calling. What's your point?
I'm glad you guys hung on and waited for the call. I just had a real quick question and a comment. The question I have for the gentleman that was brave enough to stick it out there at the house, personally, I would have made a new doorway in the place trying to get out of there. But my question is, the people that were there before you moved into the house, were they experiencing anything like what you went through? Did they have kids?
That's good that you brought that up, because that is addressed in the book. Not only did they experience it, but the previous owners experienced it as well. The day we settled on the house, for some reason, I just had a feeling. I don't know where it came from. It was an Irish family, and I said to him, "Is there anything wrong with this house?" And he was startled a little bit, and he said, "Oh, no, hey, this house is fine. In fact,
he didn't disclose that information to you before you bought the house."
Pardon me?
He didn't disclose the information to you that the house was haunted?
No. Because I think they – if let me finish my story real quick.
Yeah.
He said, "We've had mass in the living room. In fact, my youngest son had his first communion in the living room." And I thought to myself, well, that's odd. Maybe it's some type of Irish tradition or something, but who has mass in their house? So time went on, and later that spring I was in the front yard planting flowers, and my metal little shovel hit a metal box, and I dug it up. It was towards the front of the yard, and I opened up the box, and it wasn't old. You could tell it was placed there, you know, within the past year. It had rosaries in it. So I went and called the guy who just moved a few blocks away. I called and said, "Hey, I found this box out front with rosaries in it," and he said to me, "Please, just put it back. Put it back exactly where you found it, bury it again, and don't ask any questions."
Okay, I just have one quick comment, too, to make sure. I know there's other callers waiting. The only comment I had was, I know you reference it as a demon. I want to just open your mind to another possibility. and that is that just about any guy, to break a guy, I can't imagine what it would have been like to come home and see your kids and your wife slaughtered. That would make somebody teeter on the edge of insanity. So you might have not a demon situation. You might have somebody that's lost faith in humanity and who has decided to become evil. And you might just have an evil, very angry, aggravated evil spirit that's going to take it out on anybody that comes into that area because of what happened to that guy's family. That's just my personal opinion. I think there was no such thing as evil in the beginning of time. Evil is just good turned around backwards. You have a really aggravated manager that fell from heaven that knows how to make things go really bad. But I think in the very beginning there was no such thing as evil because the devil himself used to be an angel. So all he knows how to do is turn good around backwards to make things bad happen. That's how I think.
Well, thanks a lot for calling in on that, Roger. Yeah, we appreciate your insights on that.
Read the book.
Yep, Michael in Toronto on our wild card line. Welcome to the show. What would you like to say?
Well, I guess I have another theory as to what these demons might, or that one demon might be. Well, since the family was, there were four people that were slaughtered by, I presume you said Indians.
Well, when I say Indians, and again, let me qualify that statement, Native Americans, and certainly I'm not evil to Native Americans or anything like that. It was an evil deed. You know, there was atrocities carried out by both whites and Native Americans.
But I was just going to ask, do you think the house was cursed? Maybe there was Indian lore or, you know, legends or things like that, that maybe the priest had some knowledge about demons and different cultures.
The one priest did concentrate and said that he felt there was something with the land. Now later on, and again, it's getting into a lot more detail than I don't want to confuse people because it's laid out in the book.
Uh-huh.
We did find what seemed to be that a curse was placed on the house, apparently by one of the workmen who was involved in building it, and we found a piece of paper that indicated that. So there's a lot of different components. It was just like evil was drawn to this place. Evil deeds, evil people, and it just was a magnet. And affected the community around it as well.
I was just thinking of shape changers or bear walkers, like in some of the tribes in Canada and things like that, you know, just wreak havoc.
Very well. Yep. Good point. Thanks a lot for calling in with that. Let's go to the wild card line. Gary in Denver. Gary, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly. And what did you like to weigh in on this evening, Gary?
Well, I lived in a house. It was a rental house in Boulder, Colorado. I live in Denver now. And it was built on a sacred Indian burial ground. It's called Table Mesa. And there were numerous entities that still haunted the house. And everyone who came into the house could sense that. And there was a church up the hill that was an Episcopal church. And the pastor there became a friend of mine. I'm a Catholic, but he heard me tell stories, and the whole neighborhood knew that it was haunted. It wasn't just my house. And so he volunteered and two of his sons to come in and do an exorcism. And it went very, very badly. They ended up cornering the entities in the attic through a crawl space, and literally all hell broke loose, and there was a huge scuffle, and the sons both sustained serious injuries. The crazy thing about it is that within the next year, all three of the people involved all died. Mysterious, strange deaths. Unexplained, but the spirits never left the house. The I rented the house from ended up looking like a skeleton and then died while I was still living there. He had leukemia of some kind. The weirdest thing about it was that the family, I got to know the family. I lived there several years. He had three daughters and a wife that survived him. And there was a black Suburban that pulled up to their house, and men dressed in black suits came out and came up to the door after his death and handed each of the people that were his descendants and his wife $1 million check and said, "Don't say anything. Here you go." So it's kind of a weird twist on what exactly was there, but everyone knew that the housing development was built on a sacred Indian burial ground, and lots of stories very similar, although I don't know that any other houses had attempted exorcisms, but it was a very haunted neighborhood. And it just makes me wonder, everything being relative, were we and the landlord that owned the home, were we the evil spirits that had, you know, corrupted their sacred rite, and were maybe they using the spirit of Father Sky or whatever to try to drive us out, you know?
Oh, God, Gary, see, now I love that kind of thinking, because I'm a firm believer that there are multiple timelines rubbing against each other, and that some of what we experience that we think is hauntings is in fact ourselves from the future or the past. Why people see ghosts that seem just as shocked to see the people that they see and to experience and react to that, I believe that there is really something to that. So you may be onto something. Maybe to the ancient Native Americans, maybe they're witnessing some strange phenomena, and they're calling upon their leaders to try to defend against it and push it out. And to them, it's some kind of weird phenomena. To us, it's our current day bumping up against their time slot. That's fascinating. It's a great point, Gary. Thank you very much for calling in and spending some time with us and sharing your insights. A great deal. I'm sorry we couldn't get to Julio, Joe, and Joseph, who are on hold. If you'd like to stay in for the next hour with us and you have points you'd like to make, we'd love to have you chat with us. We'll also keep phone lines open for the next hour and continue talking about the strange and the supernatural. Curiously, I'll throw this question out to the audience. If you found that you were living in a haunted house with a demonic, would you leave? Would you try to stay and do battle against this and take the home back? Would you knowingly buy a haunted house if you had kids? Let's discuss that as we go forward into the next hour of Coast to Coast AM. And I want to thank our guest, Bob Cranmer, for spending so much time with us here this evening and sharing your story. Bob, thank you so much.
Well, thank you, David. I really, really sincerely appreciate the time that you've given me, not only tonight, but on your show as well. There's so much to this story that has not been told, obviously, prior to the book being published. I just hope that folks will get it and read it, and it has a powerful message to it. And I think we just scratched the surface of it tonight.
Well, maybe we can revisit with you once the book is out. So if people have more questions once they've read the book, and possibly that will open up a whole new dialogue between us. Bob Cranmer, The Demon of Brownsville Road is the name of the book. Check out demonofbrownsville.com, or you can go to Demon of Brownsville Road on Facebook. Stay tuned. We've got more Coast to Coast, more of your calls all coming up after the top of the hour.